as Tats crew, you're already like so far advanced in your head to go to another country is like, well, yeah, of course, because we've patterned up. We're on it.
Well, what was crazy for us was being introduced to Buntlack. For us, it was like a whole new world. We were like, whoa.
Killer Keller podcast. KillerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Instagram UK Frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Yes, people, Killer Keller Podcast, live and direct, Central London, or Central as you need to be. Killer Keller, your host. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. Hold tight, everybody, checking out the Kellervision app. You know, it's free download, street culture and more. We're going international. Oh my gosh, you guys ain't ready for this one, but we're coming in strong. New York City, hold tight, bio, Tats crew. What are we saying, my brother?
What's up, my brother? What's up, killer?
I love it when our flag comes together.
yeah, it took us a minute, but we got it.
Yeah, we did. What's going on in New York? Give us the ground report. What's happening?
Oh, man, I think, you know, still everybody's still going on with COVID, still happening, starting to slow down. But, you know, like the whole world, everything came to kind of like a standstill, just holding tight, you know, a lot of working from home situations. So, you know, hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll be back out there. I mean, I've been out there painting here and there, but I just go out to paint and then come straight back to the crib, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't have the same kind of social aspect as it should always.
No, not at all. I mean, it's all Zoom. It's all, you know.
Yeah. This shit can't quite. I mean, it's a funny one because, you know, the blessing and the curse is we're able to conversate like this and the rest of the world know about it. But, you know, in reality, it's like I miss those times, man.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Just, you know, something you take for granted. It's a simple thing is just walking out the door. Now you got to walk out the door. Do I got my mask? Do I got my hand sanitizer? Do I got, you know?
Yeah. Have I got my sanity? I mean, it's not.
Basically.
New York right now, bro, like, I don't even know where to begin with that one.
I know. I've been seeing some crazy shit. I mean, they're still out here, man. They're going hard. You know, full 10 cars I've been seeing on video and stuff. I'm like, wow, pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive. And more to say with logistics as well. Like, these are the sort of things you see in Hall of Fames.
Yeah. I mean, I just saw some recently, the other day, I saw some whole car top to bottom, like full style. And I'm like, damn.
Yeah, how do you get all that done in a layup?
At this point, it's just like, even with like the way things are today, with so many cameras and so motion sensors and all types of things going on, the fact that people are still able to pull work off like that, it's impressive.
Super impressive. I mean, yo, it also, here's the other thing, for a lot of people that, like myself to a degree, who weren't privy to see it directly happen back in the day, there's a whole bunch of steps that it takes to get to that point, right? And a lot of that gets reduced or forgotten about, but when you actually see it roll the way you are online and in face to face, you suddenly appreciate the moves that had to be made to get that on there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just the hours of waiting, the scouting locations. You know, there's times where you spend hours going from one location. That location is no good. You go to another location. You got to wait for workers to leave or whatever. It's crazy. I mean, I haven't done it in years, but just seeing that people are still out here full-fledged is amazing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. You guys started very early. I mean, you had the pick of the crop back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, we were good. You know, we go into a yard, start painting. Halfway through, just kind of walk out of the yard, go to the store, and come back.
Yeah. Like it was just part of your.
My leg. All right, sorry about that. That was my wife.
It's okay. This is COVID life. It's that COVID life.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, she's blending in the kitchen. I'm like, ew.
is that your lovely lady?
Yeah, she's over there. She started blending. She forgot I was on a Zoom meeting. She started blending away.
let's just jump into it, man. When did it all begin for Bayer? When did it begin, brother?
I mean, for me, it's early on. You know, I grew up here in New York City, so in the late 79, for me, is when I really got that bug. And I had spotted graffiti, you know, I saw it on the subways. And during those times, you know, you had all the greats painting, you know, this is what the heyday of the New York, you know, graph scene. So I grew up in that time. So seeing that, like, you know, late 79, early 80s, when I was like, I need to jump in. So I kind of, you know, like everyone, you start out as a toy early on, just wanting to learn the ropes. And when you're a toy, nobody's going to help you. So, you know, you go and you gravitate towards other people who are learning as well. And you little bits here. And there was no like internet back then. There was no magazines. There was none of that where you could pick up a book or a video and learn about this stuff. So it was really like you really had to go out and find information and get information, little bits from here and there to be able to actually jumpstart a career to paint trains.
That's crazy when you think about it. Who were the influences? The immediate ones that come to mind back then?
I mean, the immediate ones are, you know, the obvious ones. The ones that people see, man, you know, the Dondies, the Lees, the Scene, you know, Zephyr, the Crash, Days, Shy, Kaz, you know, all the rock star guys that were doing all these productions back then, you know, to people these days, it was a common name that they seen in magazines, but we didn't see these in magazines. We grew up watching these actual pieces live, you know, running. So this was our direct influence, not from a magazine, but just standing at a station and watching that car pull in with these, you know, top to bottom whole cars by scene. And you're like, damn.
Damn. Damn. I mean, it can't go without saying the influence that must have had on the whole of New York. Give me
something like. Yeah, now my dog is going crazy. Hey, quiet.
This is that MTV Cribs that should have happened.
Yes. he's going nuts because somebody's knocking on the door. So.
It's all good. It's all good. As long as it's not the transport police, we're all good. They're tapping us in now, man. it goes without saying the influence that went on back then. And I'm thinking, explain a little bit to me and to everyone else, the energy, the landscape. Try, if you can, give us a mental picture of New York in the state it was in as a youngster, and how much of an impact those colors, those styles, those writers had.
I mean, you got to understand, yeah, the landscape in New York City was just the whole climate of the city was, you know, in decay. The city had no money, no funding. So the trains obviously, you know, were tagged up. The streets were dirty. You had entire neighborhoods that were burnt out, you know, abandoned buildings and that sort of situation. So to see like these colorful trains was like, wow, it was like comic books, but created by, you know, people from your neighborhood. Even though you didn't know a lot of these artists, this was something that you related to because it was coming out of your environment. You know, you see a dirty train followed by three more dirty trains, and all of a sudden, boom, a masterpiece. And you're like, whoa. Mm. And, you know, it just made you want to do that. Grab it, especially if you weren't into art or something like that. You know, like for me, when I first saw it, I was like, I saw like this character on the train, and I was like, shit, what is that? I want to do that. But I didn't know what it was. So I went back to my neighborhood and I started asking everyone. I said, yo, I grew up in Bronx River Projects. And I started asking people. I was like, yo, I saw some stuff on the train. They're like, oh, man, that's graffiti. I was like, what's that? They was like, you got to get a name. You got to get up. I was like, then that's what I need to do.
Oh, man. Were you into art at the time like that?
I'm sorry?
Were you into art at the time like that? Was it a thing?
No. I mean, yeah, yes and no. Like, I didn't know. I used to like to copy, like, the comic, like, in the newspaper. I used to have, like, different comic strips. I used to, like, try drawing the characters from that. I like, even before I knew about graffiti, I like experimenting with letters. Mm. So it was a natural fit for me. The minute I saw that, I was like, this is what I need to, I want to do that. I didn't know what it was, but I knew I needed to be a part of it.
Yeah, because it was so impactful and still right. young and everywhere.
And then the crazy thing is, because at the time, you know, graffiti obviously was illegal, but considering what was going on in my neighborhood, you know, what my other friends were into at the time, as we're growing up, getting more heavy into heavier crimes, graffiti actually steered me away to a different direction. Instead of saying, hey, let's go do an armed robbery, I'm going to go steal paint, you know, shoplift paint from a store and go paint trains. And that at the time was the lesser of the two, you know, so it's kind of like a saving grace for me. Yeah, it was sure. illegal. It was illegal, but it was something that kept me out of, you know, a different lifestyle.
Bio, you touched on a really serious point, and it's one that comes up fairly frequently on the podcast. You know, is that, has it saved your life? Hasn't it? What could you have been doing had you not done that? And it's often when you see graph escalate, or rather accelerate in the society and become more, it almost like changes form from art to a protest. And a lot of that is about people's circumstances and the state of society as a whole, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you feel that was the case in the Bronx at the time? You, like you say, you could have gone in any which direction, but it actually, it saved you to be doing art instead of, you know what I mean, going down those other roads.
Right. I mean, it was a way of you as somebody young, you know, in a city existing, you know, it gave you an identity. It gave you a sense of belonging, a sense of, you know, pride. Like, you start with nothing and you build up this name. And even though people don't even know your face, you're building up a respect for a name and you're starting to get, you know, some recognition amongst your peers. And it didn't matter that the outside world or the rest of the world had no idea what was going on. Mm-hmm. You existed in that little world, your community, and you were like, oh, this is the person that painted this. Boom. Now you got your little props and, you know, that's your voice. And then, you know, obviously different artists have used their voice in different ways, as you mentioned, you know, some to speak out against injustices or whatever, some just to glorify their own name, just to belong, to be part of a movement, you know, that we didn't even consider that it would become a worldwide thing, you know?
Yeah. And graff wasn't all, it was associated with hip hop to a point. I think a lot of it was right place, right time for it, right? But it was...
Yeah, it existed. Like, a lot of people put it, you know, as part of hip-hop, which it is. You know, it's definitely, you know, they coexisted. But there was so many other graffiti artists who didn't listen to hip-hop music, who were into rock music, you know, skateboarding, a different way of life. But it just, you know, hip-hop happened to be around at the time. I mean, hip-hop was named, you know, then they gave it elements, you know, the music, the dance. But I think the way graffiti kind of got pulled in there was like, you know, the graffiti artists were the ones doing the flyers. They're the ones painting the jackets for the MCs or doing a backdrop, you know, for the party or something. So it just was all part of that culture. And, you know, that's why it's included in, you know, the element of hip hop. But it existed as on its own prior to that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And just going back to the source, the original kind of aesthetic and how it was created at that time. You guys were working with a lot of the writers that you grew up seeing were working with some really basic materials. It's a far cry from what it is now, right?
Very basic, really basic. It was like you had Wet Look, you had Red Devil, Rust-Oleum, Krylon, and these were probably the better brands. And then if each of these brands had maybe 20 colors or 30, you know, there wasn't a big selection. And then in terms of caps, you basically worked with a thin cap that the can actually came with, or you would go to the supermarket and try out different caps from different products. So, you know, you try like a starch from a, you know, spray starch or different, whatever caps you could take off and fit on the can. And then sometimes you modify them, you pin them out to make a fat cap. So it was very basic, you know, basic, you know, tools that we used back then.
Was that fun? Did you enjoy that?
It was fun. I mean, you know, the thing is, you didn't know you didn't have all the luxuries because they didn't exist.
Yeah.
You had everything you needed at that point. It was just a question of you learning how to master a cap that sprays out faster than the, you know, cap would today, you know. And that took, even for someone like myself who's been painting, you know, up to 40 years, that transition of going from those basic caps to more modified caps that slow down pressure took an adjustment, because I was like, this thing sprays too slow. You know, it doesn't get it out as fast as I need to. I'm used to working at a faster pace.
Yeah, but, you know.
Over time, you adjust.
It's funny you say that, because, you know, for beatboxing, right, I would try different microphones, and each microphone created a different density, a different bottom end, a different top end. And like you say, it's very, you know, when you found something really unique and to your taste, when it suddenly hits you like with impact, you're like, yo, this article, this item, this thing, it's working for me. It's crazy, isn't it, when you find that thing, right?
Oh, hold on one second. We have a house phone that never ever rings. Like, it's ringing in the background.
I tell you, this is that Cribs shit.
listen, wait, hold on. Make it better. I mean, let's see what else happens.
Yeah. You watch this. We're going to get a mosquito influx or something. Something crazy is going to happen.
I'm surprised my dog hasn't jumped up. Speak. All right, he's ready to jump in the picture.
Yo! Hold tight. This is a podcast exclusive right here.
All right, come on, Ruby, go down.
Oh man! Oh my goodness! Legendary podcast in the making, here, baby. But as I was saying, yeah, you do find your tools, and when you find something that really you feel super upgraded, that's the shit, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's an evolution of, you know, if you do something long enough, you know, you're gonna evolve with all the new equipment as a DJ, as an MC. It'll be new mics, new turntables. You went from turntables to Serato. You know, it's.
Yeah. Exactly. But do you feel like sometimes because of the products the way they are, I certainly feel it from time to time where it has this look because the products are so on the money and so on point. I like some of the old school guys grabbing it and using it because it feels like a four-wheel drive, like a super upgrade in what they ever were. And it's like, it's almost like their ideas really come to life without any restrictions. But a lot of the time it feels like quite everything has a similar kind of strength. Does that make sense?
Too sanitized or it's too polished?
Doesn't
have the rawness.
Do you feel that?
I do. I mean, the part of it, you know, when you look back at some of the older paintings, or even like if you see like some of these older guys work on canvas, you see how raw it was to what they're doing today, where it's everything is very clean and sanitized. Yeah. I'm obviously able to create more intricate, you know, work nowadays with the caps and the paint. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a big difference. And if everybody's working with the same tools, it becomes like, all right, you know, where's the difference here? Where's the skill? If someone who's just learning how to paint can have the same level of control with a can as somebody who's been doing it for 30 years or more.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But maybe that's just progression. That's just the way it is.
That's what it is, man. It is.
Because it benefits everybody else at the same time. Anybody that's got the skills ever, like you say, 40 years, man.
Yeah.
40 years.
Long time.
Tell the people your first ever graph experience. How did it go down? How did you manage that experience?
Terrible, man. I did my first train I ever did. The trains were a silver and blue at the time. And I remember I had this whole plan. I was going to do light blue and dark blue because the stripe on the train was dark blue. So I was like, I'll save time. I don't have to fill in that part. So I went to this layup. And I didn't even reach the window of the train. And like, you know, from standing on a track, I did it from like midway down. And it was like a mosquito bite on an elephant, right? Something that nobody in the world would notice it. I did it blue, light blue, dark blue with black outline. And I remember waiting on the subway platform for this, you know, for days for this little thing to pass by.
Yeah.
And it was just not even noticeable. I remember, I think And the crazy thing, on the other side of that car was, if I'm not mistaken, was the Hand of Doom that was painted on the other side. So, my little insignificant mosquito bite didn't even register on the scale of what was happening, you know? But for me, it was like the most amazing thing. When I saw it go by, I was like, oh my God, this is, I did that. Yes, yes. But it was insignificant. Like nobody ever, it's not something you would notice, especially when you got something like the Hand of Doom painted on the other side of it.
Listen, Bo, some people would just like, that's, you with the Hand of Doom. You're on a authentic of the moment. You couldn't even peel that off a piece of paper. That experience is
It's crazy. I mean, you know, it's funny that you see all these trains now. You've seen them for so many years in magazines and in shows, but you remember them in a different way because you saw them, you know, whether you were walking down the street and you know, because in New York, we have elevated subway tracks. So whenever you would hear a train coming, you automatically would look up and just to watch the show go by, you know, just like, let's see what's new. Let's see what's on there.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine. And yeah, because you've got the bridges, right? There's a lot of bridges going on.
We got all these in different sections of the cities. We have underground subway, but we also have elevated tracks. So anywhere you're walking in the street, you can kind of see, you know, the trains.
The Bronx is kind of, I mean, here's the naive statement here. The Bronx is kind of big, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty big. The Bronx is pretty big. I mean, compared to Brooklyn, which is a huge borough, it's smaller, but it's not as small as people think.
Yeah.
North, the south, east, west parts of the Bronx. So.
Yeah, exactly. How did Tats Crew come about?
Tats Crew came about, and I was still in junior high school at the time, and I was going to school with Brim. Brim was actually, we were going to school called 127 in the Brunx.
The legend Brim.
Yeah, Brim. So Brim had this idea. He had met Mac, who became part of the crew. We didn't even have a crew at that point yet. So I remember meeting up with Brim and Mac's building in Harlem in 116. He lived around 116 somewhere, and he had this idea of a crew, TAT. And at the time, I think he wrote Top Art Team or something like that. And the reason we chose the A, it was because there was other crews like TMT, TMT. That's so we're right. Like, if we put an A, you know, alphabetically, it's the first, you know, bumps you to the top of the list.
That's right.
So we started, you know, putting up TAT. So the early members was, you know, Brim, myself, Mac, and another friend of ours, Bass. And that was, you know, during junior high school. Then when we went to high school is when, you know, the other members came on, like Nicer, BG, you know, yeah. Rash, 125th, you know, Volcan, and everybody else.
Yeah, wow. You know? I mean, what a...
So that was the early beginnings of the crew.
Crazy.
You know, then years, you know, then maybe like mid-80s is when they did... BBC, I think, did the... document, I think it was Hip Hop History with Bambaataa and stuff, and then Brim actually was part of that, and they did a spinoff called Bombing,
which is what we all know. Well, anybody that's deep into the hip hop and graffiti culture know Bombing.
So we went out there, and that's where we met Goldie, you know, 3D, Motu, like all these guys from back then who, you know, we've still been friends for many years.
Mm. Well, Goldie is Tats, right?
Yeah, for many, many years, you know, since those, we've been friends, you know, like family since then for over, you know, 30 somewhat years.
Over the last few years, he's really supported my podcast. And I hold him very close to my heart. He's a mate to me. And
he's a maniac.
Yeah, he's dude. Without question. But he's like, you know, to me, he epitomizes everything that the UK street culture scene represents. And he just holds himself iconically, and it's just awesome that he has his flowers, and
finished up a documentary on his life not too long ago. I don't know when they're going to show it or release it, but it's pretty good.
Well, you guys were fully fledged in the Sky documentary recently too, right?
I think, is that the one that he just did on Goldie's life?
No, it was a Sky Arts thing, all about graph. You guys had a big jam in Miami. You did a big
burn. Oh, yes, that's the one.
Boy.
In Wynwood, that we were painting out in Wynwood.
That's right. I mean, Miami has changed. Art Basel and all that. It's almost like they haven't got enough walls to cover to want more graffiti, right? But
yeah, it's crazy. It's insanity over there during that first week in December, last week in November. It's like artists from all around the world go. They just converge on the city and just like it's a madhouse.
Do you feel like, because, you know, Brim really took it to the international masses. Tats Crew became an international thing. Do you feel contributive to this having happened? And B, how hard was it to have been counted in as forerunners to spread the word of your version of graffiti?
I mean, you know what's funny? At the time when you're in it, you don't know it's that. You don't know what you're just going, you know. Obviously, we went out to England to do the documentary and be part of that. But then, you know, we was painting some walls while we're out there. So you don't realize at the time that what you're doing is becoming history, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you're just existing in that moment and you're doing what you do. You know, you never say, okay, I'm doing this because I want to be recognized. I want to be here. You're there. You're existing in that moment, the present. So, you know, years when you look back, when people say, no, it's funny because there's a place we painted in England and I don't even remember the place. And people are like, oh, you guys painted here. And I'm like, I don't even know what that area was called. I'm like, so I know we painted, but it was like the circle by highway somewhere. And I did like a piece with like some bombs or whatever, where we last or whatever. But I have no idea.
Comment below, people. You know the deal. You know what we're doing here.
That was 1985, I believe.
Mad.
And it was just, you know, crazy for us. But then, you know, looking back and then you see all these videos and photos looking back, people are like, you didn't know what, you know, was going to happen from then to now.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit like when I think back to my gigs, my shows, yeah. It's like, it's all be one big merge. You can't remember. But people hold it to their heart that you came through and passed the message on, didn't you?
Yeah, people, like for instance, somebody goes to your show. For you, it's a show. You do a show, but you don't know how your show has impacted somebody else at that point in their life.
Yeah.
So they have that memory of you doing this show where yours to you. And you're like, I was at a show. I was doing a gig. But for them, they experienced it in a different way. They were on the receiving end of it.
Yeah, it's true. It's a funny one. It's a funny one because, like you say, what you think, what is actually second nature to you in the Bronx as Tats Crew, you're already like so far advanced in your head to go to another country is like, well, yeah, of course, because we've patterned up, we're on it.
Yeah.
But you know, when you came through and done what you've done, bombing the documentary, it just left it. It was just like explosive.
Well, what was crazy for us was being introduced to Buntlack. For us, it was like a whole new world. We were like, oh, this is serious now.
Who introduced you to Buntlack?
I don't remember. I don't think there was only paint available that was there that we had when we were here, when we went there. And it was just so, so much better quality than what we were used to using.
And that's amazing. You know,
it was amazing to us. It was like, man, this thing is the best.
That's the shit. I had no idea that it surpassed the
yeah, because we were using Krylon, which was watery and stuff like that, and Rusto, which was thick, but Buntlack had the colors and the quality of like a Rust-Oleum. Mm. And like a better color selection. So for us, it was like a whole new world. So I remember we did an event, and again, we painted a wall. It was a wall, makeshift wall. It wasn't a real wall. Something Gardens, me, Brim, Goldie, and 3D.
Okay.
And we painted this wall, and that's when, you know, I had the full experience of the Buntlack, and I was like, damn. I did like a Cheech Wizard character on the piece I did there, I remember.
I mean, that lineup alone is scary levels. Scary levels.
Yeah, no, it was Chrome Age, as they were called. It was Prime, Mode,
that's Goldie, right.
Yeah. Goldie, me, Brim, and 3D, yeah. That was the lineup there.
Hold tight, Mode 2, Hold tight, 3D. Wow, I mean, the journey that you guys have been on, eras spring to mind, you know, like the Con Art era of hip-hop. It was, you guys were the goat. This is how it seemed to me anyway, you know, as an onlooker for Graffitism magazine and the Odd American mag, is you guys really did embrace the media side of it. And you took graff to a whole next level with quality productions in association with brands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How was that? How did that come to fruition?
I mean, that was just a natural evolution of what we were doing, you know. You know, you've painted, you've done the subways, you start painting out on walls, you start now collaborating with companies and doing work and just taking it to a different level. You're watching what's happening, believe it or not, overseas, and you're looking at the scale of what is happening in other countries. Like, for instance, Germany started to produce like these amazing, you know, ridiculous work. And we were like, okay. So we're kind of just echoing back what we're seeing.
Yeah.
It's funny. We although we may have started earlier, we were still learning. Like, to this day, we're still learning from even artists who have been doing a lot less than us, you know, because we're a lot of people. I think for me, one of the things is I don't like to stay stagnant and be like, all right, this is the style I did then, and I'm going to continue doing the same exact thing. You know, I'll take a look and see what a younger guy is doing and be like, all right, I see what he's doing. That's something that was done back then, but he's doing it with a new twist.
You know what it reminded me of? And this was only, again, from a musical point of view, you know, you guys made...
Hold on one second.
Your head getting around. Yeah. It looks like some like 90s rave video.
I'm trying to plug in. Ruby, go down.
This is my favorite Zoom podcast ever. it's the how to make an engaging podcast. If you know any graff, you're gonna love this. It's almost like a re-export, man. It's like as soon as the UK took rock and roll, they re-exported to you guys and it reignited an idea. And I felt like that was with Germany, man, when they started coming out with those techniques.
ridiculous. It was like, wow, you know. So again, even that time when we painted with the characters that Mo2 was doing at the time in England in the 80s, we were like, damn.
Yeah.
You know, it was like advanced.
Yeah. It's the influences that were there, wasn't it? It's the different influences.
Yeah. It's just, it's like a circle. Just, you know, each one just feeds off one another and it continues to evolve.
And that's the beautiful thing about, it's the beautiful thing and it's the thing that they just, authorities can't get with and it stirs them crazy. The whole idea of like this thing, it doesn't, people don't want to get paid for it. They want to do it because it's habitual. And they're influenced by other people that are doing it habitually.
Basically. You gotta watch me. I'm listening to you. I'm watching my dog as he's trying to jump up here again.
what effect did the European style have on the US as a whole? I've never asked that before.
I think early on was the difference in the paint, just simple things like the paint in England, right? Mm. Then moving forward when, you know, guys in Germany started to put more emphasis on background than the actual names, where, you know, instead of the name being the focal point of what you're doing, it kind of became, you were putting the name into a scenery or a landscape or a backdrop or a concept. Mm-hmm. So that kind of changed. I'll speak for myself. For me, like in the early 90s, that kind of changed my perspective of it as too. Okay, let's create these theme walls. Let's create, you know, with more content, not just pieces, you know, just two names or whatever. Let's create, you know, backgrounds and add some characters and create a whole, you know, whatever going on.
For sure. Lumet, Dime, Delta, these characters.
Yep. Lumet, for sure.
Lumet with just crazy concepts of morphing even the animals that he was putting his name into and shit. That was just...
Yeah, little cow paintings and stuff like
that. Do you remember that one? That was crazy. Yeah.
We was doing it, you know, it was different. And Dime, when he came out with his 3D style, was ridiculous, you know?
Just game-changing. It was just like, how? How are you doing that? What?
Yeah.
And so it just carried on.
you know, so for me, it's been a funny journey just watching, you know, this stuff coming from New York, growing up watching the guys in the subways, to watching the movement go worldwide, to still being a part of it and, you know, learning how to use the new cans, the new paint, even social media, you know, having to become, you know, tech savvy to remain relevant.
Yeah, that certainly has been the hot topic for a good 3 or 4 years. With every year that goes past, the strength in graffiti as an art form being on social media strengthens. And right, I'm going to be spicy here.
You're spicy.
Get spicy with it, right? When social media platforms come into play, whether it's TikTok or Instagram or whatever, you know, they come out every 2 or 3 years, or at least an upgrade on a platform comes out. Yeah. Forever, this line in the sand kind of kicks in where, I don't know, like some social media platforms, like the Instagrams, they have an attention space, which if the clever and cunning artist gets on board to begin with, they get the most attention, which in turn makes them the forerunners of a scene, but that doesn't actually equate to their legacy.
Right.
A lot of people don't go on those social platforms who have a legacy because they feel like their position is strong. And often I feel like, yeah, how come people get the credit? It's weird because on one hand, good for them, you know what I mean? And if you've got skills, cream rises to the top.
Right.
But I often feel like that line in the sand really is detrimental to even the historical documenting that we're talking about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I can see what you mean, where you have someone who's doing a little wall in their backyard and has, you know, 100,000 followers because he's able to manipulate, you know, social media and knows his way around it, where someone who has done a lot doesn't have as, may have 1,000 followers, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I could see that. And they're like, this guy, in the eyes of today's world, this guy's more relevant with 100,000 followers than the person who's actually can put in work. So I can see that. But I also feel that if, you know, it's up to the individual to, again, you know, you cannot sit back and relax and be like, all right, I was the great I am 30 something years ago. Mm-hmm. And expect for people to fall in line. You have to put in work as well at this point, you know. And I think with the introduction of the internet and social media, it put pressure, I think, more so on artists, where the constant pressure to create, you know, before you do a wall, before internet, before, you know, all this stuff, you can paint a wall, paint something, and it would take months. You know, you would mail a photo to somebody in England, you would mail a photo to someone overseas, and it would take months.
Yeah.
You know, for everyone to see, you know, this work that you painted, mm-hmm. that you created. But in today's world, you know, you can paint a wall today, and as you're painting, is live streaming. So by Wednesday, if you're painting on Monday, by Wednesday, it's already old news in this new world. You know, so you're forced again to go out there and create again to just to keep, you know, have content. Mm. You know, at this point, it's got kind of, we've all become content providers.
Essentially, yeah. I feed the machine almost, isn't it?
Feed the machine.
Bioman, like, I ask you this mainly because, you know, I've been following Tats for a fucking long time, boy. Like,
I just think you're really old.
Yeah. But you've always been ahead of the curve on the tech. Oh, you know, when I think about it now, you guys have, you know, you brought the TV world to graph. You Well, one of the guys that did that, you were the team that bought, you pioneered a lot of stuff in new media and connecting graph with the music industry as well as brands. And you've always been forward thinking like that. And your Instagram tells 1,000 stories of the similar sentiment.
Yeah.
What's the what do you feel like the future is? Because it appears to me that you're ahead of the curve.
I mean, at this point, you know, it's, here it is. It's not, you do what you do. The world is going to happen around you, right? So you do what you do. You feel what you do is right in your career and your, you know, whatever direction you want to move. So for us, it's been that, you know, whenever we did something, it was like at that point in time, it felt it was right for us to be doing that. Mm. You know, so today it's the same thing. You know, at this point in my career, yes, I still do the graph, but as, I don't know if you can see, there's a background picture behind me. At this point, you know, a lot of work on canvas. And
if you're listening, you know, he's got a badass background canvas thing going on behind him.
You know, so it's more about, yes, we've produced thousands and thousands of work, but a lot of that work has been lost. It only lives in photos. So at this point in our career, it's more about painting canvas and preserving, you know, as much of the work as we can.
Yeah, that's really important. Have you got into the NFT thing yet?
No, I have no idea what that is. I see what I'm saying. This is about where I'm talking about staying relevant and knowing what's going on. For the past 2 weeks, I've been like, what is this? I need to figure
She's about to get crazy on you know, on crypto. You know, this whole NFT thing. Get your design. Get your, you can have audio with the design. You can make it animate. And you know, this is like, it's like trump cards from back in the day. Top trump, you know, baseball cards. This, but
people purchase these and hold them on, and they live on their computer or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, to explain it on one, honestly, it's deep. It's deep like the abyss. But it's just. It's crazy, bro. The game is going to change, and
that's what I'm saying. I'm seeing this, and I'm like, okay, I feel lost. I feel lost right now. I need to grasp what's going on. That's why I've been looking. So if somebody write about it, let me look into that.
You know who's all over at the moment? Arrow from Heavy Artillery. He's like all about.
Oh yeah.
Him and Graffiti Kings are all about that at the moment. They're figuring some stuff out. I'm good for them. Yeah, so just a whole other world, isn't it? There's a whole podcast in itself.
That's what I'm saying, is just figuring it out, the next wave, you know, and hopefully be there to, again, maintain a presence.
Yeah, exactly. When did the name Bio come from, by the way?
This came early on. I was trying with different names. I was trying VIO, BIC. So I had a friend of mine that lived in the projects with me. We were in the stairwell hanging out one day. And he had like really good hand style. Like he never became like a known writer, but he had very good hand style. Mm. So he did like, he said, why don't you try a BIO, like combine two of the names I had. He did like a bio tag. And when I looked at the letters together and his hand style, I was like, damn, that's pretty dope. I said, I'm going to run with that. So I kind of stuck with that. It was like a fusion of two other names that I was trying at the time, you know, before I committed to something.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, for what the letters are, you really have honed it and made it your own. It's the I and the O, they're workable, but you've got to know the letters, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny though. For years that I struggled with it. It's like, I was like, I don't have a style. I don't have an identity with my letters. Like, because I would see other writers and, you know, their style fits into a certain look. And then I was like, every time I paint it's something different. I can't find my
oh man, I bet that is like the gold that everyone searches for in graph.
And then I realized that became my identity, where I don't kind of stick to the same. Obviously it looks, because it's done by the same hand, it has the looks of my work, but the styles are different sometimes, the colors, the fill-ins, I don't know, it's just something that happens. It's not even something planned. I've never been able to stay in one niche.
Do you think that's what keeps you wanting? Is that you feel like you haven't achieved that echelon of style that you can, that makes it identifiable to, and you're happy in only?
Well, listen, I came to terms with it. That's not going to happen for me. I just keep painting. Whatever happens.
Yeah. Why worry about what you can't control?
Yeah, I'm like, I've come to terms with it. I'm good. This is my style. I'll do all the styles.
Oh, brother, you kill it. Honestly, a pioneer. Who are you looking out for at the moment? Who measures in kudos in the mind of Bio? Who's out there that you're like, yo, like, yeah, they're doing their thing.
Oh, illegally, illegally. Different artists.
Yeah,
I mean. I just saw there's an artist, I don't know, I think he's from Spain, right? Caesar.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's an old cat, young cat, but some of his like gimmicks and some of his like works are pretty good.
There's crazy.
Miedo, I think another guy from Spain. Pretty dope style. You know, there's a lot. There's so many, like, it's hard, like, so many artists around the world. You know, you got guys like Odia from Portugal, who's doing like those 3D anamorphic kind of fucking work where shit is jumping out from corner to corner. So it's crazy.
That Mediterranean vibe at the moment, they are coming out with some pretty, like, it just feels funk and energy, don't it?
Yeah. I mean, and for me, it's like, damn, you know. There was a point where I'm like, the work has gotten so, you know, high quality that I'm like, why do I even bother?
Yeah, not hearing it.
You know what I mean? You know, it's like, damn, you motherfuckers are beasts.
You know what? I must admit, as a beatboxer, I definitely look at the scene nowadays and I think to myself, damn, like, it's so fine tuned that it's almost folded in on itself, and you're like, how could anybody, you know what I mean? It's like, how the fuck?
How is this humanly sure possible?
Yeah, it's not frost, like, and I just, you know, one hand, I feel extremely grateful to have been part of that organism, but at the same time, I'm like, would I get into it now? How would you even begin to?
It's crazy. Even if you look at B-Boys, some of the stuff they're doing, like the dancers, yeah. I look at them and I'm like, damn. Like, you motherfuckers are levitating and shit.
Yo, I'm telling you, bro. Here's one thing about B-boying right now is even the fucking beats that they're working with, even the beats that they're moving to.
Yeah.
Break dance beat. It ain't about break beats no more. It's like they're on some other shit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's evolved to the point where if you took somebody from back then and they're looking, they're like, I can't do any of that shit.
And I often think to myself, you know, what would the 18-year-old, because, you know, we got into it through youthful wisdom, and I'm like, what do people do? Yo, how do they think about this? How do they think about this? What process do they have in their head of like, yeah, I'm just going to pick up the can, or yeah, I'm just going to replicate this, what this breakdancer, and when it's so clearly definitive and it's hard to deconstruct. That's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think, again, like in everything, it's all an evolution. And it's you picking up something at a point that it's evolved. Just like for me, when we started, obviously, you had the pioneers before us who started out with a simple tag with dots in it and a cloud.
Yeah.
And then the next guy came and added 3D and added a cloud background bubble. And then we picked it up from that point and elevated it to whatever point we were going to elevate it. And then the generations that follow after us take it from the point where we left off. They're grabbing it at the highest point and then taking it somewhere else, you know? So I think it's the same for all other genres, you know, whether you're a DJ, you see somebody scratching, you know, obviously the first guy who invented the scratch couldn't do the stuff that's being done now. But for a young kid coming up now, seeing what's being done now, like, all right, that's his starting point. Your high point is his starting point.
It's only going to get fucking higher and higher and
so you don't even recognize it. It's like, what is that?
Yeah, like some Martian or Land Down, he was previously here in 1983, kind of comes back 30, 40 years later and be like, yo, what the
crazy.
At the same time, Bio, I feel like, you know, and let me put it in context why I come steering this way is because you guys, for me, as somebody that was super into the New York sound of Onyx, DITC, Beat Miners, you know, EPMD, more business than a personal era, you guys were the, you know, Tats were the, that you guys were my visual representation of graph in that time. And it feels to me like only you guys can own the standards and quality of that. Bio can only be Bio. You know, no one else can copy that.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what it is, you know, that same way we cannot be the guys from the 70s, you know, we are who we are. You own it. And that's what makes it unique, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And it's, honestly, man, it's been a fucking pleasure chatting with you, brother.
Listen, I'm glad we got to do this. Thank you for having me, and I wish you all the best, man.
Brother, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. A walk in the park, a walk in the cribs, and the life of Bio Tats Crew. Hold tight, my brother. Killer Keller Podcast, striking again with a vengeance. Don't forget sharing is caring. Tell a friend to tell a friend, all right? Killer Keller Podcast, we are like he was out of fashion. Peace.